Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Lenten Laughs. We find out more about the Lenten readings, podcasts and music offered by the Catholic social networking site XT3 that provide not just inspiration but even some laughter during this traditionally solemn season. And Sex Trade Ordeal. Listen to the inspirational life story of a former prostitute who quit her job, became a Catholic and set up a shelter to help other sex workers leave the trade and start a new life. Lenten Laughs was the headline of a recent press release that caught my eye. It was an unusual coupling of words, because laughter and humour are not normally associated with Lent, which is traditionally seen as a solemn period of prayer, fasting and almsgiving. The Lenten Laughs catchphrase refers to part of the programme for Lent this year, offered by the popular Catholic online social networking site XT3. The brainchild of two British brothers and an entrepreneur, XT3 was launched at World Youth Day 2008 in Sydney, and it now boasts over 40,000 members from 200 countries. Its aim is to encourage young people to serve the church and help strengthen the links between the two. XT3's Lent calendar for 2009 offers daily readings, podcasts and music to give inspiration and some laughter during the 40 days of Lent. One of its podcasts in this Lenten section is entitled Does God Have a Sense of Humour?, where comedians give their take on this mystifying question. Let's hear the view of well-known British TV comic Tim Vine, who appears on Wednesday's podcast.
God invented humour. He wants us to laugh. Let's all go out and laugh. And the great thing about laughter as well is it's infectious. And I think that's part of another reason why God invented it, was because it helps spread joy to other people.
That was TV comic Tim Vine, who holds the world record for telling the most jokes in an hour. And here's an example of one of his famed one-liners, again taken from today's podcast, which may just provoke a laugh amongst our listeners.
So I was having dinner with chess champion Garry Kasparov. We had a black and white Czech tablecloth. It took him 2 hours to pass me the salt.
So why did XT3 decide to put the accent on Lenten laughs during this 40-day season of prayer and fasting this year? A question I put to Ruth Davis, a media spokesperson for XT3 based in Britain.
Because we felt that there was room for humour even within Lent, and there's an angle upon which we can often take ourselves very seriously but God not seriously enough, and so it's a twist on all of that that we have launched it. And in fact it's definitely tickled the sense of humour of our members, as it's been listened to a lot even in this first week, so we're very pleased with the response we've had.
So in fact you've had no members that have disapproved of this Lenten levity?
No, I think it's a take on the fact that God is with us in everything, and he's not just about when we go to Mass or when we decide we're going to be devout or when we're going to be earnest, that everything in life can include him. And why were we given humour in the first place? And is it a God-given gift? And if so, it's something to rejoice in too. And I think too that Lent is, as much as anything, a time of finding space for God in our lives, in the ordinary and the everyday, and seeing him in everything. So this is coming at it from a slightly fresh, different angle. But the heart of what it's all about is the same as what the purpose or the penance is that our God is a God of love and a God of joy. Living this life with him brings all of that. And along with that comes a lot of laughter. But a lot of the great saints had a great sense of humour and never took themselves too seriously, although they took God very seriously. And I think it's something that's often overlooked.
So you've had positive feedback, as you said earlier.
Definitely. It's exciting. And We've also got a Facebook application so that people can access it from Facebook or just from our login page. And so it's spreading virally, which is good news.
What other Lenten material do you offer during Lent this year? Can you tell us briefly about some of your offerings?
Yes, we've had the Pope's Lenten message, the Stations of the Cross, which we'd had lots of requests for that were enacted at World Youth Day last year, talk on St. John of the Cross by a Carmelite called Father Ian Matthew, who's written various books on St. John of the Cross and knows him intimately. Our Sunday feature now every week since the beginning of the year has been 180 Holy Seconds, where a priest gives us a short 3-minute reflection on the Sunday's readings. Mondays during Lent, we've got a new podcast where young people are asked what their favourite bit of the scripture is and why, 3 minutes long, and in fact that's taking off really well. So there are all sorts of interesting, different, layered things on offer on the calendar, and hopefully it's going to reach out to as broad a range of interests as is possible.
What about prayers and readings?
On each door of the calendar, there is a scripture quote from the daily Mass readings, and then we've got a link on the door to, if you want to read the full text for the daily Mass readings. So there is a reflective angle to each day. And then quite often the talks, we've also linked them to discussions or other areas on the site if people are wanting to know more information. So it's not a sort of closed aspect. Hopefully all of it will lead you, if you're interested in knowing more, into something else on XT3.
Do you see yourselves very much as a Catholic version of the popular social networking site Facebook?
We see ourselves as offering something different and something more than just a networking space. Its culture and heart is Catholic, but we very much hope that this will attract and encourage anyone interested in making a difference in their lives and searching for truth and seeking to do good in this world. And the whole content that we've got via our Lent calendar shows that there's a lot more going on XT3 than just social networking. And with the range and variety of talks that we've got Lord Alton talking about the culture of life, Scott Hahn giving a talk on the Lamb's Supper. All the talks from World Youth Day are there for you to access if you want, and all sorts of other new interesting things coming up. So the library is a very obvious way of our being distinguished from something like Facebook or MySpace.
And how fast is XT3 growing?
It's growing healthily. We'd never turn down bigger numbers, but it's looking very healthy, and the heart of it is very well. And lots of very good friends have been made on here, and it's a safe and welcoming environment is the feedback that we seem to be regularly getting through. So we're always looking for new ways of getting word out about XT3, but we're happy with where it is at the moment.
And moving beyond just your Lent offerings, what are its most popular sections in general?
The groups are very popular, but in particular a group called Ask a Priest, which has got thousands and thousands of threads, where you post a question about anything and everything, but very often to do with the Catholic faith, something that you don't understand or something you've been asked by a friend and you're not really quite sure how to respond. And that has, I'd say, at least 5 new threads a day start up. And we have very blessed in having a priest in Sydney, Archdiocese, who looks after that group and responds to all the questions with great insight.
And what are some of the burning issues that these young people are searching for answers?
Well, a lot of them link up with theology of the body or the sacraments. The most recent threads on the site is all sexual activity before marriage, mortal sin, baptism, harm reduction strategies to do with politics and social justice, a question on agony in the garden under the topic of theology, infallibility and the assumption, receiving Holy Communion, roles of men and women in the family according to the church, strength after the loss of a loved one, that's a girl who's recently lost her fiancé. Transubstantiation, Mass on Saturday night and keeping Sunday holy, fasting during Lent. So quite a broad variety of questions get asked, and it depends what day of the week you log in as to what's the hot topic.
And of the young people who've signed up to XT3, how effective do they feel it is in helping them stay close to their faith and network with other Catholics? And indeed, in fact, are most of them Catholics, or don't you know, really?
Well, we certainly don't know about everyone, but the catchment area for our first members was very specifically World Youth Day pilgrims, as we linked everything up via the World Youth Day Sydney organisation. So all the emails they received in preparing for World Youth Day, they were sent information about XT3. So a large majority of our members were also at World Youth Day in Sydney last year, which was the most amazing privilege for a community to start up from that sort of group of young people that are committed and wanting to engage and had the great graces received that were there at World Youth Day. So that's the majority of membership, but it's grown from there very much by word of mouth and various news updates.
And when it comes to your members, are most of them young people? Do you have any idea of the majority age group?
The majority of the membership are aged between 16 and 25, and in fact probably the most popular age would be 16. I would say three times as many people who sign up are 16 rather than any other age. So it's good. We're definitely appealing to that age group, which is what we were about. So we're very pleased about that.
I was speaking there to Ruth Davis of the online social network XT3. Staying on the subject of Lent, Pope Benedict is currently taking part in his traditional annual Lenten retreat. And as a result, there was no general audience this Wednesday. And now for an inspirational story that sprang from a somewhat unlikely beginning. Prostitution is often described as the oldest profession in the world, and it's arguably one of the most despised. But sex for money exists no matter where one goes in the world, and statistics show that in many countries, business is booming. In the UK, for instance, the number of men who frequent sex workers has nearly doubled in a decade. We hear nowadays how a growing number of those working as prostitutes are the victims of people traffickers who have forced them to become sex slaves. But what about those who have chosen this profession? What are their feelings about their job? And what is the church's response to prostitution? Well, I've been finding out more.
It was an abusive life. It was a soul-destroying life. You hate your clients. I hated doing what I did.
Linda Watson is a former prostitute turned campaigner who worked in the sex trade in Western Australia for 20 years, initially as a prostitute and then as a brothel manager or madame. After quitting her job at the brothel, she set up Linda's House of Hope, a shelter that helps other girls to leave the sex trade and start a new life. In 2003, she was named Australia's most inspirational woman by the magazine Women's Weekly for her work on behalf of others. Linda first got lured into the sex trade by the promise of high earnings when she was an impoverished single mother, struggling to support three children. She told me more about her first impressions.
My first client, I guess we always go back to the first client, was a high-profile media executive. I was quite amazed that somebody so powerful, so rich, and in such a high position. And I thought, oh, I had from the butcher to the baker, right to these high-profile people. But I guess you soon learn that most of them lack integrity. 99% of them are married. And you think, wow, hey, what's marriage? There is no trust. Why would you want to get married if your man's going to go to a brothel, huh?
And what were your feelings about them? I mean, did you sometimes feel sorry for them? Did you despise them? Did you fear them?
I guess you switch on and off. I think you learn very quickly that you to survive, you're going to think, I'm just doing this for the money. You know, you could be reading the paper almost. It's just such a cold transaction. So you're not really trying to focus on the person that you're with. You're focusing right at the beginning. We're going back to my beginning thinking, this will make money. I'll do this for a couple of months and I'll get out. And there lies a real danger too, where you just totally switch off.
So you never came across anybody who treated you with even a slight degree of respect?
There's a lot of people who were very, very nice. Also, I learnt that they were very insecure and, you know, I'm not a man hater. They also hated themselves for having to pay for it. I guess underneath, they had a problem. There were nice men who would talk to you. There were men who would cry because their wife didn't understand them. And so you think, oh, poor person. But really, the underlying thing is the fact that it was deceitful and they lacked integrity. That I learned very quickly, and I got very disillusioned. The reality is nothing like the Pretty Woman movie.
Linda says the sense of shame was so strong that she tried to conceal what she was doing from those around her.
I mean, I concealed it from nearly everybody that I could think of. I quickly got a nanny in. The money was rolling in. I mean, I was supposed to earn $2,000 a week. I earned $5,000 in my first week. You're certainly not going to tell your kids. But then you sort of think, right, I feel so dirty. And I remember coming home, showering, had so many showers because I felt so dirty. And I certainly lost that part of even being a mother because I even when I went to cuddle my kids, I felt so guilty. So I really did shelter them until they were old enough for me to tell them because I was really concerned that there would be somebody that would tell them.
Linda originally only intended to work as a prostitute for 2 months. But as she explains, once you get sucked into the sex trade, it's very difficult to escape.
It was very difficult to get out because the money entrapped me, the lifestyle entrapped me, and I guess I lost who I was. I lost my my self-worth. I mean, I knew it wasn't right when I went into it. I went into a whole different sort of a world.
Drug use and prostitution each tend to fuel the other. And Linda says a very high percentage of sex workers become addicted to drugs.
98% of the girls that are working are on drugs. If they come in clean, they're certainly not going to stay clean for very long.
Why is this such a problem?
Because it's an emotional job. It's also the fact that these girls are doing 8 to 15 men a day, and some are doing 20 clients in one shift. So they are needing something to fuel their bodies so that they can continue to do the job. That actually gets them to stay in the sex industry.
But although the vast majority of prostitutes do find it very difficult to leave the sex trade, Linda was able to buck that trend. She told me how one day she decided she'd had enough and wanted to start a new life.
There was a lot of aspects for me leaving the industry. My mother's prayers, for start, she prayed for me for 20 years. She never stopped praying for me to get out of the industry. And I had so many bad experiences. And when Princess Diana died, I guess that was a pivotal moment that I thought, all the money that you can make isn't going to make you rich. I guess there was a whole pile of issues of seeing all the pain and hurt in people's eyes over 20 years and my own pain. I asked for God to help me and his guidance that night, I think August the 31st, 1997. I just said, God, if you're really there, reveal yourself to me. And I couldn't put it more clearly that I cried out for God to help, and he did.
But what was so unusual about Linda was that once she left the sex trade, she didn't forget those she'd left behind. Instead, she decided to go back and rescue others from the sex industry.
I had a passion on my heart, and I guess the other side of it as well is 20 years, who was going to employ me? I was 42 years of age, and I wasn't ready to lie down and not do anything. But I guess the defining moment was that what can I do with my life? And what purpose can this serve? And I guess the biggest thing for me was that the government was about to legalise prostitution in Western Australia. And that was the pivotal moment that I sort of said, right, this isn't going to happen. And from there, I had a burning passion to save others and to warn others not to do that. Don't go down that path.
But as she told me, trying to find support and backing for her idea of opening a shelter to house former prostitutes proved incredibly difficult.
Difficult was an understatement. I had banged on doors for 2 years, and I got to the stage where I sort of went to every possible places that I could think of that I could go, and every door was closing. You know, people were starting to even laugh at the fact that I was still continuing my search for this dream or vision. And I said, I have this passion and vision that I can provide a home, I can do something for people, but everybody's shutting the doors in my face.
But one day, a door was not banged shut in her face, and Linda was given that vital helping hand.
I could not believe how he welcomed me with open arms, and he believed in me, and he believed in my vision, plus fighting against legalisation. He was an answer to my prayers.
The answer to Linda's prayers came in the person of the Catholic Archbishop of Perth, Barry Hickey. It was he who helped her to set up a shelter for former sex workers. Here's his side of the story.
Linda rang me, almost in desperation, saying, I was a madam and I pulled out of the industry and I want to rescue girls. Can you help me? I immediately said, I don't know how to help you, but I will help you.
Was it an easy thing to do? Were other people trying to dissuade you from it? I mean, how did you go about it?
Well, I waited for 2 weeks and said I'd call you back, and I did. And by then I'd resolved that if she needed accommodation, I would provide at least one house, and we've been able to do that. And now she has a second house, which is the house where the prostitutes mainly stay. But there was some surprise, a lot of surprise. Some people shook their heads and said, what's he getting into? But generally, the support has been great.
Archbishop Hickey remains actively involved in Linda's project and says through his association, his eyes have been opened to how much the sex trade exploits these women.
I visit the place every couple of months and I meet the girls that are there at any particular time. There are lots of success stories, girls being very grateful that they had a chance to escape that prison of prostitution and have a chance to do some studies, to get some skills and to get other jobs.
And what have you learnt on a personal level from your involvement in this project and from your talks with these people who are trying to escape from the world of prostitution? I mean, has it sort of broken down, shall we say, some stereotypes that many of us may harbour about these women?
One of the things Linda has always said is that there is no glamour in prostitution, and I've found that out too. The lives of these girls are anything but glamorous. I've discovered that most of them have entered prostitution against their will. They themselves have been abused in many cases and have very low self-esteem. I've also found out that my opinion of men generally is not that good. They exploit these girls across every section of society. Most of them are unfaithful to their wives. It is not a good scene. There is a lot of exploitation also by the people who control the prostitutes. So I see it as a grimy trade, and I'm glad Linda's there rescuing these girls.
In Britain, Dr. Elaine Storkey is a well-known Christian author and sociologist who is president of the Christian development charity Tear Fund. She has done several studies on prostitution and has been involved in faith-based projects to try to rescue sex workers from the trade. Elaine believes the Christian churches often have a tendency to be too judgmental when it comes to the issue of prostitution. Instead, she says, what is required is a sense of compassion.
Why is it that they're trapped into this lifestyle? Why is it that they have so little respect for their own bodies that they're willing to use them in this kind of way? And I think just talking to women and trying to give them more self-respect and more body sense that's positive rather than negative is also what we can do. I think where we failed a lot is just simply seeing prostitutes as immoral people whom we need to legislate against and hound out of our patch. They're real human beings with great needs and often very bad backgrounds, and we need all the compassion we have to actually work with them.
Elaine told me how even a single kind gesture can succeed in reaching out to what many perceive as hardened sex workers.
There's one project in the UK in an area of London well known for prostitution where a bunch of churches decided to get together and on Christmas Eve go around all the known prostitutes in the area with a rose, a single red rose, and not with a tract and not with a complaint or anything, just with a rose to say, this is Christ's birthday, we want to share something of what we feel about Jesus Christ and with you, and then leave the rose with them and wish them a happy Christmas and go away. And one of the women who had received a rose spoke to me, and she said it broke her heart. She had no idea that the God that the church believed in was a God who actually loved her. And she had that rose, and she said when it finally died, she just wept and wept and wept because somehow something of herself had gone into that rose. So I think a lot of women are feeling very negative about themselves in the job. A lot of them are struggling to get out. A lot are very, very defensive because they feel they're being judged by others. And then a few do feel that this is a perfectly okay lifestyle and they're going to stay with it. It's very mixed.
Returning to the situation in Australia, how does Archbishop Hickey evaluate the Catholic Church's response to prostitution? And how much help does it provide to those trying to get out of the business?
I would say that only on an individual level is much else being done. Occasionally a prostitute will approach a priest or a convent for help, but that is rare. I think Linda's project in this part of the world is the main contribution that the church is making by supporting her.
So In your view, a lot more could and should be done?
Yes, I think government and the community generally should support efforts to rescue these girls. The scene here is very different from trafficking that goes on in third world countries or from third world countries to Europe. We have some trafficking here, but not much. Most of the prostitution is by local girls in local brothels controlled by local people.
And when it comes to the men that use prostitutes, is the church speaking out enough against the fact that they should not be doing this, that they are exploiting this women?
I do use opportunities that come my way in the media to say those things, but generally prostitution is glamorized. The image of a prostitute is one who is wealthy, who is having fun, and who wants to be where she is. It's a completely wrong picture. We're doing something, but we're not getting enough publicity because I don't think people believe us.
When you say you don't think people believe us, what do you mean by that?
I mean that they think that if the church speaks out, it's just speaking out about outdated moral code. But when people get close to prostitutes, they see that their lives are very sad indeed. We have very little legislation, so prostitution is on the rise, but we want better legislation to control it, but not to license it.
Why is prostitution on the rise, in your opinion?
I think it's the general culture of the country, where personal freedom is emphasized to such an extent that prostitution is seen to be a man's right, and it's mainly men who look for girls. It's just part of the general culture that people can do what they like and nobody should put up any moral barriers. Also, it is not generally understood that the girls are harmed by prostitution and exploited, and that's the message we want to put out there to men.
Perhaps not surprisingly, Linda's courageous decision to help rescue girls from the sex trade has earned her many enemies among her former associates in the business. She told me how on numerous occasions she has risked death because of her stand.
When I first left the industry, I spoke to a madam and she threatened me and asked me to leave town, and this wasn't going to happen and she wasn't going to stand for it. And then I got shot at, I've been shot at, firebombed, threats, nearly kidnapped, people nearly through my roof. Can't count the death threats. It's been horrendous.
But you're carrying on.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have my dignity back and I have something worthwhile fighting for, and I believe in what I do.
But regaining her dignity and self-respect is just one of the rewards Linda has found in her new life. A Catholic convert, Linda says her greatest moment came when she met the late Pope John Paul during a visit to Italy in 2004.
Well, I met the Pope. Wow, that was just the best reward that I ever had. I just felt like, oh my God, I'm standing here right in front of the Pope and here I am. It was just like redemption for me. I just felt like Mary Magdalene standing there in front of the Pope. That was my greatest overwhelming, and of course I'd won the most inspirational woman of Australia, and that didn't mean as much as meeting the Pope.
That was the voice of Linda Watson, a former sex worker turned campaigner, and you also heard the voices of Archbishop Barry Hickey of Perth and Elaine Storkey, an expert on prostitution. Well, that's all for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, and you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.